This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Stephen J.K. Walters, an economist who's made a name for himself advising Major League Baseball clubs and advocating property tax revolts, truly loves cities. He believes cities are concentrations of human, social, and physical capital that can transform lives and make their residents successful. Walters believes no city is beyond hope, and any city can be a boomtown if it just follows the prescriptions he's distilled in years as a professor of economics at Loyola University, Maryland, and at the Johns Hopkins Institute for Applied Economics, Global Health, and the Study of Business Enterprise. So he called his new book, Boomtowns, Restoring the Urban American Dream, and he's here with me to tell us about it. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Sheila. Thanks.
You devote about the first third of this book to a theory you've spoken and written about a lot in Baltimore. Cut property taxes, put a lid on them that city officials can't raise without a vote of the people, and watch the investors and citizens pour back into the city and make it healthy again. Briefly, why do you think it would work that way?
Well, because it's worked that way wherever it's been tried. Sometimes it's been tried against the will of the political hierarchy within those cities. But it's worked in Boston. It's worked in San Francisco and Oakland and other cities where caps have been put on. So the key thing that you pointed out, that was a great summary of that proposal, is put a lid on. So there's a cash flow issue about taxes. Everybody's familiar with that. We don't like to pay them. It makes us a little poorer when we have to dig deeper in our pockets and so forth. But the other thing, the putting a lid on, is really related to what I think is one of the main themes of this book, which is you've got to protect people's property rights if they're going to want to live in your domain. And so by capping the taxes in some way and making it really hard for people to just sort of make a grab for the value of your property, you reassure people about investing in a city. And, you know, the investments that we're talking about in cities last decades. I mean, one of the great things about Baltimore is some of the investments that people made over a century ago are still here. So if you're going to invest in something that's going to last 50 or 100 years, you're going to pay very close attention to, well, what can happen over the long haul. So the lid is kind of a key thing here. So the cities that have succeeded in this domain are the ones that have said, okay, not only are we going to make taxes more competitive, but we're going to put a binding promise on ourselves not to go after you and reduce the value of your property with tax hikes that can happen anytime it's politically convenient. So that happened in Massachusetts with Prop 2.5. It happened in California with Prop 13. What's hard to do is to get cities to vote these caps on themselves voluntarily.
Well, yeah, and it's hard to get from here to there. I mean, you lay out that San Francisco was able to do it without a lot of cuts in services because it got tens of millions of dollars from the state because the state had surpluses.
They got $100 million in year one of their budget problems. They got $1 million from the state in year two. They made it on their own in year three. And by year four, they actually were starting to run surpluses again. So it was essentially one electoral cycle where San Francisco had budget problems where they needed some relief.
And that's a year of a bunch of people's lives.
That's – well, and politically, it's poisonous because if you're the mayor of a city and you have a four-year term and I tell you you're going to have 4 years of budget problems, you're going to say, well, then I'm not listening to your advice about what to do with tax rates and so forth.
You write – that other factors might have hollowed out Rust Belt cities like Baltimore, maybe white flight, manufacturing moving south, the appeal of suburban space. But you think property taxes can overcome all of that?
I think property taxes can reverse the outward momentum. And specifically, the property rights, the reassurance that a tax cap will give you, that not only will tax rates be competitive, but they won't. Those competitive rates won't go away as the political winds shift. I think everything we've seen has been that when that kind of assurance has been made, out-migration ceases of people, but also out-migration of capital investment, and in-migration starts. Nothing else has to change so dramatically as that basic property rights issue. So I really think that's a feel-good story because I think what we've seen is No great political cultural change has to happen. We don't have to magically transform the schools into something new and different. We don't have to magically change crime rates for this to happen. What we've seen is that when investors get reassured about the security of their property rights, they come back. And then once they come back, you can start working on these other problems because the city's better capitalized, better financed. The city government has more resources with which to fight other problems. But you have to fundamentally reassure people about their property rights. And if you do that, great things happen.
As economist Stephen J.K. Walters here on WIPR Maryland Morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his new book, just published, Boomtowns, Restoring the Urban American Dream. I don't want listeners to think the book is all about taxes. You also take on unions and praise right-to-work laws.
Mm-hmm.
Right-to-work laws say that workers in a shop that's been organized by a union don't have to pay union dues.
Right.
And you call right-to-work, quote, simply the most obvious and effective step, close quote, to a better business climate.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
It's a very visible signal that a large number of regulatory policies and so forth will be more conducive to capital formation and less repulsive to capital flight or repulsive to capital investment, I should say. It's the studies that have been done about right-to-work laws make clear that it's not a panacea by itself. But usually the states that pass a right-to-work law are also passing other regulatory reforms and tax reforms that make capital investment more secure and improve the cash flow from capital investment. So it's if you pass a right-to-work law, nothing's going to happen overnight without going along with some other policies that are more conducive, make the investment climate more friendly and the labor climate more competitive.
You are a big fan of putting public assets like toll roads under private control.
Mm-hmm.
When does that make sense?
Well, what we're seeing with infrastructure is that there's a terrible short-sightedness problem under public ownership. When assets are owned publicly, the officials that we trust to administer those assets face election cycles, and so they tend to focus on the short run. They tend to focus on what needs to be done right now to reelect them to guarantee their political future. Often that involves robbing from the future to pay the present. Sometimes it means raiding the capital budget, the capital maintenance budgets for roads and bridges and so forth to raise pensions for public employee unions, say. So by taking things out of the public domain, by privatizing ownership of certain key infrastructure assets, you can cultivate a longer time frame for analysis for when you have to restore things, when you have to rehabilitate things. The private owners of assets tend to take a longer view than people who have to face an election every 2 or 4 years, and so they tend not to raid those capital maintenance budgets quite as eagerly as the political sphere does. So anytime you're talking about key infrastructure that is susceptible to this kind of short-sightedness problem, you should start thinking about taking those keys away from the public sector and putting them in the hands of somebody who will say, well, I need to maximize the value of these assets over the long haul. And that's generally what happens in the private sector. Nothing's perfect. Private sector has people that behave in a short-sighted fashion too. But the betting odds favor private ownership over public ownership when you're talking about this kind of long-lived asset that you have to keep and maintain and constantly rehabilitate.
And I'm sure there are people who would argue that point too, but we're out of time. I appreciate you talking to us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Stephen J.K. Walters, professor of economics at Loyola University, Maryland, just published Boomtowns, Restoring the Urban American Dream. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, and more of this interview, including the TRIM property tax cap in Prince George's County and whether it fits into Walters' theory. I'm Sheila Cast, ahead on Maryland Morning. Mark Hyman, sports. Stick with us on 88.1.